After supper that night, they buried Dooley on top of a small hill that overlooked the Eagle River. Andy asked if he could say a few words.
Of course you can.
Andy stood over the mound of fresh dirt, holding his hat in his hands as he spoke.
Me and Dooley was friends. Now, everybody has friends. But if you ain't never been in the army, then you don't know how important army friends is. You see, most of us in the army is a long ways from home, so Dooley was more than a friend. He was my brother. Like the song says, we rode 40 miles a day on beans and hay. Mosquitoes was worse than Indians. Boredom was worse than fear. Loneliness was worse than brutal sergeants. But we managed to come through it all because we was friends.
Andy paused for a moment and looked at the bowed heads around him.
You was all good friends to the two of us, and I reckon I'll get through this all right because of friends like you.
One by one, the others came by to shake Andy's hand and say a word or two of comfort to him. Sally embraced him, then all went to spread their bedrolls. Smoke let everyone sleep through the night, secure in the knowledge that the herd was not likely to wander away from water. Over the next 2 days, it turned cold, and by nightfall of the 13th day out, it was so cold that a constant fog of vapor hung over the herd and issued from the noses and mouths of horses and men alike. The campfire that night was as welcome for its heat as it was for the fact that it cooked their supper meal and furnished the light. Smoke and Sally slept in the chuck wagon. The others spread out a canvas from the side of the wagon and, building a fire up for maximum warmth, spread their rolls out under the canvas. During the night, unnoticed by Smoke, Sally, or the sleeping cowboys, huge white flakes began drifting down from the sky. The snowfall was heavy, continuous, and silent. Smoke and his cowboy slept peacefully, warm in their bedrolls, completely unaware of the silent snowfall. While they were sleeping, the world around them was changing. There was no grass, no dirt, no rocks. Even the trees and shrubbery had become unidentifiable lumps. The entire world had become one all-encompassing pall of white. Because she had to prepare breakfast, Sally was always the first to awaken. When she opened the back flap of the wagon and looked outside, she was greeted by such a white, featureless landscape that for a moment she thought she might still be asleep.
No.
What is it, Sally?
Smoke, look at this.
Smoke roused himself from the blankets, then crawled to the back of the wagon to look outside.
Oh, damn.
What will we do, Smoke?
We keep going.
How? We have 3,000 head of cattle, and snow that is at least 2 feet deep. How are we going to move?
I haven't figured that part out yet. But we're going to move. We've got no choice. It's either move or stay here and lose the entire herd.
After Smoke was dressed, he jumped down from the chuck wagon and crawled up under the canvas to talk to the others. They were all awake and squatting on their heels, looking out at the snow.
Morning, boys.
Damn, Smoke. I thought the whole reason for taking the herd up to Wyoming was so we wouldn't have to go through all this.
Yeah, it was. But you know what they say, man proposes, God disposes. I reckon this is just his way of testing us.
Some test.
What are we gonna do?
We're going on.
What do you mean we're going on? In case you ain't noticed, there's more than 2 feet of snow out there.
Leroy, I'm going on. You can go on with me, or you can turn around and go back.
Then I'm going back.
Go back to what? We don't have anything to go back to.
I don't care whether we have anything to go back to or not. Anything is better than this.
Well, you can go back if you want to, Leroy, but I'm staying.
Come on, Hank. Staying to do what? You know damn well we can't drive cows through 2 feet of snow. Not if we got behind each and every one of them and pushed.
This man got us out of jail, and I gave my word that I would go to Wyoming with him. And I aim to keep that word. As long as he is willing to keep going, then I'm staying with him.
Hank!
I'll see you when I get back.
If you get back. Billy, you got more sense than this, don't you?
Tell all the painted ladies back in Big Rock I said hello, will you?
And tell my mom I'm doing fine.
Leroy looked over at Andy.
What about you?
Dooley died trying to get these cows up to Wyoming. Seems to me like if I'd stop now, well, I'd sort of be letting them down. No, sir. I reckon I'll be staying with Mr. Jensen and the others.
Leroy, if you're going, get all your goodbyes said and be gone. We got work to do today.
Damn it! Damn it! Damn it! Damn it! I ain't going!
What you mean you ain't going? Why not?
Because I reckon when you get right down to it, I'm as crazy as all the rest of you.
I figured you were too good of a man to just pull up and leave a job undone. I'm glad to have you with us.
But what I want to know is, how the hell are we going to do this? How are we going to get out of here?
We're going to ride out.
Well, that's easy enough to say. A horse will break trail in snow. A cow won't.
Then we'll break a trail for him.
All that day, the silence of the white-covered scene was broken by the sound of sawing. The men went about their labors, cutting limbs from the trees, then tying them into place. By nightfall, they were ready. But because it was too dark to proceed, they made plans to get underway the next morning. Exhausted and cold, the men built a big fire, then huddled under the tarp to take advantage of what warmth the fire put out. Pearly was the one who noticed it first.
I'll be damned. I'll be damned.
What is it?
Can't you smell it?
I can't smell nothing but cold.
That's because you ain't never smelt Miss Sally's apple pie before. Nor ate none of it either.
He's right. I smell it too.
Soon, the rich aroma of cinnamon and apple permeated the entire area, and everyone could smell it. Supper was biscuits and a satisfying stew, but everybody's thoughts were of the apple pies Sally had made. After supper, she brought them out, three of them, which she carved into very generous portions for everyone.
I thought that after a day like today, a big piece of apple pie and a hot cup of coffee might lift everyone's spirits.
Yes, ma'am, you thought right.
The men's spirits were lifted as they ate their pie and drank their coffee. They exchanged stories. Sally and the men laughed at a story Andy told about how he and Dooley had put one over on the same sergeant Mike had gotten into a fight with.
Say, Jules, where'd you learn to play baseball like that? You're pretty near as good as them boys in them white pajamas.
Pretty near as good. He was a lot better than any of them.
Yeah. Where'd you learn to play like that?
Well, I don't know. Seems like from the first time I ever saw the game, I could play. I think it'd be great to play ball and get paid for it like them boys was.
But you have too much honor.
Honor? What you mean he has too much honor? I mean, yeah, I think he's got honor and all, but what's that got to do with playing baseball?
It don't have nothing to do with it, really.
That's not what Sheriff Carson says.
Tell them, Smoke.
Sheriff Carson? What does he have to do with it?
He was umpire, remember?
Yeah, I remember.
Sheriff Carson said that our man, Jules, here was offered the chance to play for the unions and to get paid for playing. But they wanted him to strike out his last time at bat.
Strike out? What? They tried to talk him into striking out?
They told him if he would strike out that he could play for them. And he would make a lot of money. More money than he can make being a cowboy.
Those dirty bastards. Begging your pardon, ma'am, for the cussing.
That's quite all right. Anyone who would try and get someone to cheat is a bastard.
Why didn't you do it?
Mike, you aren't serious.
Well, I mean, think about it. This was just one game that didn't really mean nothing. He could have made a lot of money.
It wouldn't have been right. And I don't think you'd have done it either.
Well, I reckon not. Of course, the question never came up because I ain't a good enough baseball player. But if it had come up, I reckon I would have done the same thing as you've done. Though I might have stopped to think about it a little.
Say, Smoke, why don't you tell us about Matt?
Who?
Smoke rode all the way to Denver just to see a fella get some kind of award from the governor. A fella by the name of Matt Jensen.
Matt Jensen? I've heard of him. They say he's fast as lightning with a gun. Say, you got the same name. Is he your kin?
He's not blood kin. But I raised him from the time he was 12. That's how he came to take my name.
Tell us about when you found him. This is a good story. You'll like it.
Well, it started in weather just like this. I got caught up in a snowstorm, and I needed to be on the other side of the mountain range before the snow closed the pass. So, although every ounce of me wanted to hole up somewhere long enough to ride the storm out, I pushed on through, fighting the cold, stinging snow in my face until I reached the top of the pass. I made it through. Then started looking for a place to spend the night when I saw the boy.
That's when you seen him? In the middle of a snowstorm?
Yes. I almost missed him. There was a big drift of snow so that only the boy's head and shoulders were sticking out. He was under an overhanging ledge, and his head was back and his eyes were closed, so I didn't know if he was sleeping or if he was dead. The boy's face and lips were blue. and there were ice crystals in his eyebrows and hair. The only protection he had against the cold was a blanket that he had wrapped around him, and that blanket was frozen stiff.
Damn. What did you do?
I put my fingers on his neck. It was cold, but I could feel a pulse. But I knew that if I didn't get him back to my cabin soon, he would die. So I cut some limbs and built a travois. Then, stuffing moss in between a couple of the blankets, I made an insulated bedroll. And tying the boy onto the bedroll, started down the other side of the mountain. The snow continued to fall, and walking was hard. I knew it was going to be hard enough for the horse to move, even without pulling a travois. So I walked in front of the horse, holding on to his bridle. It was so cold that the air hurt my lungs as I sucked it down. And I didn't have any snowshoes, so often I would sink nearly waist deep into the drifts. Because of the clear air, the unbroken whiteness, and the white distance was contorted, it seemed like I was getting nowhere. I remember once I had been working really hard for 2 hours, and yet when I looked back over my shoulder, it was almost as if I had just left. I could still see the rock overhang where I found the boy. And if it had not been for the fact that I knew exactly where I was and how far I had to go, I would have been pretty disheartened. But I knew that I would be to the cabin before nightfall. I trudged on through the snow for at least another 3 hours until, finally, the little cabin came into view. I have to admit that the cabin I lived in then wasn't much to look at. But considering the alternative at the time, it looked better than the finest mansion you could imagine. I picked the boy up from the travois, carried him inside, then deposited him on the bed. Then, after I took care of the horse, I came back in and fixed supper.
Did you make him an apple pie?
I'm afraid not. That was a little beyond my capability.
What did you make him?
Beaver stew.
Beaver stew? I don't know as I've ever eaten any beaver stew.
That's what the boy said.
That he'd never ate beaver stew before?
That's it. He didn't ask who I was, or where he was, or what was going to happen to him. All he said was that he didn't think he had ever eaten beaver stew before. I figured then that if he couldn't be shaken by nearly freezing to death, then winding up in a total stranger's house eating something he had never eaten before, then he had to be a boy with gumption.
When I've heard of the fella, he's proved you right.
Yes. Matt has made me very proud over the years.
Yeah. I don't know about you boys,
but I worked hard today, and I figure I'll be working just as hard tomorrow. So I plan to get some sleep.
Smoke, we need Nighthawks tonight.
Nah, I wouldn't think so. Where would the cattle go? Now, you can let everyone sleep tonight.
Ha! That almost makes the snow worth it.
By daybreak the next day, Smoke and the others were in position. As part of the outfit, every man had 2 horses in the remuda so as to always have one that was fresh. But on this morning, every one of them was using both horses, paired as a team, for a total of 10 teams. They had tied a log crossways behind each team. 9 of the teams were abreast, and in front of them was the chuck wagon, its wheels lashed to poles that were running parallel to the wagon. The poles had the effect of creating runners, so that the chuck wagon was converted to a sleigh. In addition to the team of mules that normally pulled the wagon, the 2 horses that would have belonged to Dooley had been put in harness with the mules.
Smoke, maybe you ain't thought of it, but if all of us is up here, there ain't nobody riding to keep the herd going straight. What is it, Billy? What did I say that was so funny?
You ain't got to worry none about them cows going nowhere. They're going to follow the road we'll be making for them.
Billy's right. We'll be cutting a trail for them, and they'll follow along behind like some old yellow dog.
Yeah, I can see that. Damn, that's smart. How'd you come up with that idea?
You don't have to worry none about how Smoke comes up with his ideas. He's about the smartest person I know.
Except maybe Miss Sally.
In good-natured fun, Smoke threw a snowball at Cal.
Sally. Don't you be paying any attention to him now. He's just buttering you up for more pie.
Well, when's the last time you made him a pie?
I guess you have a point there.
Smoke looked out at all the men. They were standing on the ground behind their teams, holding the reins as if they were plowing a field.
Is everyone ready?
We're ready at this end, Smoke. All ready on this end.
And let's move them out.
Smoke was an active participant, for like the others, He had a team hitched to one of the logs, and he urged his horses forward. To Smoke's relief, the horses appeared to be able to pull the logs without too much effort. From time to time, a rather large mound of snow would pile up in front of a log, and whoever was driving that team would have to clear the snow away before they could proceed. They'd gone no more than 25 yards when Smoke turned to look behind them. His plan was working. Not only was there a wide swath through the snow behind him, the cattle were following along. They plowed their way through the snow for the rest of that day, and halfway through the next, until they came to an area where the snow was so sparse that vegetation was showing through. By then, the cows, hungry after 2 days of not being able to graze, began to feed. It was 9 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, and Trent Williams was in the barber shop getting his weekly shave.
Why, have you seen Jason Adams yet?
No, not yet, but I expect to see him today.
Yes, sir, I expect you will. Jason is one happy man.
Well, I'm glad he is taking it so well. When I first offered him the deal, he seemed a little hesitant, but as I explained to him, it is the only way he can save his ranch.
Hesitant? Why would he be hesitant?
Well, let's face it. In order to keep from having his ranch go into foreclosure, he's going to have to give up his entire herd. That's quite a sacrifice to make, but at least he will save his ranch.
Oh, he isn't going to have to give up his ranch. He isn't going to have to give up anything. He's coming in to pay off the loan.
What? Oh, damn it, man, you've cut me!
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. You rose up so quickly that...
Here, give me that!
Williams grabbed the towel. He wiped off his face and examined the cut. It was very small and was barely bleeding.
Fortunately, it doesn't look very bad.
Just leave it alone.
Williams treated his own cut for a moment. Then, when it was obvious that it wasn't going to bleed anymore, he looked over at Cook.
What do you mean Adams is going to pay off the loan? How the hell is he going to pay off his loan?
Well, after old Mr. Devaney died, Jason said it seemed like the right thing for him to do.
Devaney? Abner Devaney?
Oh, yes, sir, that's the one.
What does Devaney dying have to do with whether or not Adams pays his note off?
Well, sir, as I'm sure you know, Mr. Devaney was Millie Adams' father. When he died, he left all his money to her.
All his money? What are you talking about? That fool didn't have any money.
Oh, yes, sir, he did. Turns out he had quite a bit of money. I'm surprised you didn't know that.
But how could he have money? He didn't have as much as one dime in the bank.
No, sir, he didn't, but that don't mean he didn't have no money. He said he didn't believe in banks. He always kept his money in a jar, buried out back of his place.
How much was it?
According to Jason, it was a little over $3,000. Oh, I don't know how much he owes, but he says that's enough to pay off his note.
Yes. Yes, that is quite enough.
Well, there you go, then. I know you told me that you bought the note. You must be happy, knowing that you aren't going to be stuck with the note.
Yes, very happy.
Walking Bear stood on the rock and looked far down into the valley at the two wagons moving slowly along the road that paralleled Wind River. Four soldiers rode in front of the wagons, and four soldiers rode behind. One who had stripes on his sleeves rode alongside. Walking Bear knew that a soldier who had stripes on his sleeves was a soldier chief, and that could only mean one thing. Something very valuable was being carried by the wagons. Looking behind him, Walking Bear saw 20 mounted warriors awaiting his orders. He felt a swelling of pride because so many had left the camp of Red Eagle to follow him. Red Eagle was an old man whose time had passed. Walking Bear was young, strong, and unafraid of the white man. Soon, all in Red Eagle's camp would follow him, and perhaps other camps as well. He would lead not 20, but many times 20. A mighty nation of warriors, and they would drive the white man away from the ancient land of the Cheyenne once and for all. He came back down from the rock.
What did you see, Walking Bear?
Two wagons. They are heavy with things the white man values.
Are there soldiers?
Yes. Soldiers in front and in the back. A soldier chief rides alongside.
Perhaps we should let the wagons pass.
If you are a woman, too frightened to do battle, you may stay. I will attack the soldiers and take what is in the wagons. Brave hearts will go with me. Cowards will stay behind.
The Indian who suggested that they should let the wagons pass was shamed by Walking Bear's words, and to redeem himself, he rode to the front, then turned to face the other warriors. He held his rifle over his head.
Hey, Little Hawk!
We'll ride by the side of Walking Bear when we attack the soldiers.
Walking Bear nodded in appreciation, then turned and started riding behind the ridgeline, approaching the wagons and soldiers in a way that kept the warriors out of sight. When he reached the end of the valley, he led them up to the top of the ridgeline. As he had planned, the wagons were now beyond, so that as the warriors came down the hill, they would be approaching the wagons from the rear. Lifting his rifle to his shoulder, Walking Bear aimed at the soldier riding at the end. The soldier tumbled from the saddle. The wagon drivers urged their teams into a gallop, but the wagons were too heavily laden, and Walking Bear and his warriors overtook them easily. Walking Bear divided his men into two columns, sending one to the left side of the wagons and the other to the right. Recognizing the leader of the soldiers by the stripes on his sleeves, Walking Bear shot him. The Indians overtook the lumbering wagons and brought them to a halt. Walking Bear beamed with pride over the tremendous success of his adventure. Behind him in the road lay seven dead soldiers, including the soldier leader and the two drivers. Only four of the soldiers had gotten away, but they had not even attempted to give battle.
Get the food from the wagons. We will take it to the village of Red Eagle. Let us see him tell the people they cannot take food from us.
Several of his warriors leaped up onto the wagons and rolled back the tarpaulin cover. Both wagons were filled with boxes, and the Indians proceeded to break into them.
Iron. Why would they put iron in boxes? No food, Walking Bear. You said there would be food. There is no food.
Walking Bear stared at the boxes, nearly all of which had been opened now. There was white man's writing on the outside of the boxes, but he was unable to read it.
Ah!
Walking Bear watched his triumph slip away from him. A train sat on the tracks at the depot, its relief valve venting steam. A small white sign nailed to the railroad depot identified the town as Sorrento, Wyoming Territory. The town was small, with a posted population of 215, but it was busy beyond its size because it was a railhead to which surrounding ranchers brought their cattle. The air of the town was perfumed with the strong odor of the several hundred cows that were now waiting in feeder lots awaiting shipment. Trent Williams dismounted in front of a small building that had a sign out front identifying it as the Indian Agency. Shortly after Williams stepped inside, a large man with mutton chops and chin whiskers came into the room.
Yes, can I help you?
I'm looking for Mr. Abernathy. Colin Abernathy.
I'm afraid Mr. Abernathy isn't here. His office is in Laramie. My name is Seafish Malone. May I help you?
I don't understand. Isn't Abernathy the purchasing agent for cattle to be used to supply the Indians?
Well, yes, he is, but he is in Washington right now and won't be back until the 5th of next month. In the meantime, I am authorized to accept delivery of the cattle and to give you a receipt which will be redeemed by Mr. Abernathy for the appropriate amount. Do you have cattle?
Yes.
Ah, then you must be Mr. Kirby Jensen. Well, Mr. Jensen, I must confess that you got here much sooner than I thought you would. You have 3,000 head for me, I believe.
Williams didn't know anything about Kirby Jensen or his cattle, but for the time being, he thought it might be a good idea to go along with Malone's belief that he was Jensen.
Yes, 3,000 head.
Oh, well, good, good. As soon as I make an inventory of the cattle, I can issue a government draft for the funds. Where are the cattle? Just outside of town?
No, the herd isn't here yet.
Well, yeah, I can understand. It's a long way up here from Big Rock, Colorado. But the sooner you can get them here, the better.
Yes, well, I just wanted to check and see if you still wanted to purchase the cattle.
Mind you, in order to secure the purchase, you must be the first one to deliver the cattle. And I must warn you, you are not the only one in the picture. A man named Trent Williams has also contacted us for possible delivery.
Yes, I understand. I'll rejoin the herd and bring them up as fast as I can.
As Williams left Malone's office, his mind was racing with possibilities. If he could deliver over 3,000 head, that would be over $100,000. All he had to do was get control of the 3,000 head of cattle that a man named Kirby Jensen was bringing up from Colorado. The way Williams saw it, there were two problems to contend with. Problem number one was to find the herd. Well, that shouldn't be too difficult. After all, given the mountains, passes, and rivers, how many ways up from Big Rock, Colorado were there? Problem number two would be to take the herd once he found it. That shouldn't be too difficult either. With 3,000 head, he could afford to hire a band of men to do the job for him, and still have more money than he would have had he been able to take Jason Adams' herd. He could afford such a band of men, and he knew just where to find them. Before going to bed that night, Trent Williams sent a telegram back to Salcedo. The recipient of the telegram was a man named Will Staley. Staley was the former sheriff, but he'd been defeated in the last election because of accusations that he had been in cahoots with a cattle rustler. Staley denied the accusations, but was defeated anyway. Now he operated a private cattle protective agency going after rustlers. Although he was no longer a sheriff and no longer had territorial authority to make arrests, he compensated for that by declaring himself a bounty hunter, and indeed he did collect bounty on those who were wanted. But his primary income came from the cattlemen who hired him. There were those who said that Staley didn't always let the law get in the way of getting the job done, especially if there was enough money involved. Williams was sure that he could offer Staley enough money to get the job done, but he could only pay if Staley succeeded in getting a herd for him. And the herd Malone had mentioned, the one belonging to a man named Kirby Jensen, would be that herd. It had been 5 days since they came through the snow and were again on dry ground. In fact, as far as Andy was concerned, it was too dry. The reason for that was that he was riding drag and eating the dust kicked up by the herd. It was because he was riding drag that he was the first to see the Indians. He wasn't sure he actually saw them because it was only a slight movement, a shadow within a shadow that caught his eye. He dismounted and pretended to be working on his saddle while actually looking behind him. There, he saw it again. And this time there was no question. Three Indians riding in line moved through a cut in the ridge. They were bending low over their horses, obviously trying to remain unseen. Andy remounted, then rode, not at a gallop, but at a quick pace until he caught up with Smoke.
Smoke, there's some Indians on our tail.
How many?
I don't know, but they are trying their damnedest to stay out of sight. So I know they're up to no good.
Andy, you think you can get to the other side of the herd without letting the Indians know that you're on to them?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. You get over there. Tell Billy, Mike, and the Buttram boys that at my signal, I want them to get the herd moving as fast as we can. The river's not more than a mile ahead, and Sally's already set up there. If we can get the herd across, we'll make our stand there.
Right.
Pearlie!
Pearlie turned his horse and rode back to see what Smoke wanted.
Andy has spotted some Indians behind us. We're going to try and get the herd across the river, then turn to face them. Send Cal on up to be with Sally. Have them pick out some defensive positions for us, then help the others drive the herd.
Smoke, isn't there a chance of spooking the cows into a stampede if we try and hurry them now?
I don't think so. They're tired and they're headed towards water. I don't think they'll scatter, and I know this area. Once they get to the other side, there's nowhere they can go except the way we want them to go. Hell, I hope they do run. It'll keep them out of the line of fire. Now get going.
Right.
Smoke watched Pearlie ride back up to deliver his message to Cal. He saw Cal ride off at a rapid clip.
Let's go! Move them out! Move them out!
The cattle started forward at a gallop. Smoke rode to the rear of the herd, pulled his rifle, then looked back. The Indians, realizing then that they had been seen, gave up all pretense of trying to keep out of sight. They started after the cattle. An Indian grabbed his chest, then fell from his galloping pony. That caused the other Indians to pull up for a moment. It was a moment only, but it gave Smoke the chance to turn and catch up with the herd. By now, the leading animals of the herd were crossing the river, their hooves churning up water ahead of the onrushing cattle behind them.
Pearlie, you and Andy grab your rifles.
Smoke pointed to the neck of a small island that faced the western bank of the river, the direction from which they had just come.
See if you two can squirm down through the tall grass. Take a position as near to the point as you can get, and do as much damage as you can when the Indians start across the water.
Right. Andy, let's go.
The rest of you, find yourselves a good spot and get ready.
As the men got on their knees and began looking around for a rock or hill or tree log to provide them with cover and concealment, Smoke walked back to the chuck wagon, where he saw Sally making herself a firing position from behind one of the wheels.
Sally, you're on your own. When the shooting starts, I'm going to be moving around.
You do what you have to do, Smoke. I've got a good position here. I'll be all right, and I suspect I might even get off a shot or two.
You might get off a shot or two, huh?
Any more snide remarks like that, Mr. Smoke Jensen, and you'll be my target.
You be careful with all your moving around.
Smoke hurried back to see how the others were positioned and where they were deployed.
All right now, remember, Pearlie and Andy will shoot first, so don't be spooked into shooting when you hear them. I want you to hold your fire until the last possible moment. Then make your shots count.
Smoke! Here they are! I can hear them coming!
The Indians crested the bluff just before the river. Then, without a pause, they rushed down the hill toward the water.
Remember, hold your fire until the last possible moment. In fact, hold your fire until I give you the word.
The Indians rushed into the water, riding hard across the 50-yard-wide shallows.
Fire!
The devastating volley was effective. The warriors who survived swerved to the right and left, riding by rather than over the cowboys' positions. The Indians regrouped on the east bank of the river.
Turn around! They'll be coming from behind us this time!
The cowboys had just barely managed to switch positions when the Indians turned and rode back in a second charge. Again, a significant number of the Indians in the middle of the charge went down. The Cheyenne pulled back to the west bank of the river to regroup, watched anxiously by the men on the island. By now, the river was strewn with dead Indians. There were at least 8 or 10 of them lying face down in the shallow water as the current parted around them.
Anyone hit?
Yeah, I've been hit.
How bad is it?
I reckon it's killed me.
Leroy!
Hank moved quickly to his brother's side.
Hang on, Leroy. We're gonna get you out of here. We'll be having drinks in a saloon in a few days, telling tall tales about this fight.
You fellas, have a drink to me.
Leroy. Leroy!
How is he?
He's dead. I can't believe this. My brother's dead.
I'm sorry, Hank. He was a good man. You're all good men.
Smoke, what about Pearlie and Andy? You think they all right?
Good question. I better go get them.
Why don't you just call them in?
No. Can't do that. If the Indians hear us, that'll make Pearlie and Andy easy targets. I'll go get them. Cal, you're in charge when I'm gone.
Right.
Smoke worked his way down through the tall grass until he reached the point. Looking up, he saw both Pearlie and Andy behind tall clumps of grass just on the other side of an open sandbar.
Pearlie, you and Andy all right?
Yeah, we're fine.
Come on back with the rest of us now. We've lost whatever advantage we had by having you out here.
All right, Andy, you go first. I'll cover you.
Nodding, Andy bent over at the waist and darted across the open bar of sand until he reached the tall grass.
All right, Pearlie, it's your turn.
Duplicating Andy, Pearlie darted across the sandbar, then dived into the grass alongside Smoke and Andy.
Anyone hit back there?
Yeah. Leroy was killed.
Damn.
Come on, let's get back.
The three men wriggled through the grass on their bellies until they reached a slight depression that allowed them to stand up. Once up, they were able to move quickly until they were back with the others.
You think they're gonna come back?
I don't know. I wish you could see them well enough to know what's going on.
I have a pair of army binoculars. Would that help?
It might. Let me see them.
Andy hurried back to where the horses were tied. He fished the binoculars from his saddlebag, then took them back and handed them to Smoke.
These are good-looking glasses.
Yeah, I took them from Sergeant Cavanaugh's.
Good. I hope the son of a bitch had to pay the army for them.
Smoke raised the binoculars and looked across the water. He saw one Indian who was obviously in charge riding back and forth in front of the others, holding a rifle over his head.
Somebody seems to be stirring him up.
May I take a look?
Sure, they're your glasses.
Andy lifted the binoculars to study the Indians.
I'll be damned.
What is it?
It's Walking Bear.
Who?
Walking Bear.
You know him, Andy?
Can't say as I know him exactly, but he's been giving the army some trouble for a long time now. He was part of Red Eagle's camp. When Red Eagle went to reservation, Walking Bear took a lot of warriors with him and left. But the army's been after him ever since then. He's been like a ghost. No one's been able to find him.
Yeah, looks like we just did.
Yes, sir, it does at that.
How bad is this Walking Bear fella?
Pretty bad. Just before I got out of the army, Walking Bear attacked a platoon of soldiers that was escorting a supply wagon. He killed every soldier in that platoon.
Are you sure this is Walking Bear?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Sally, come here for a moment, would you?
Sally walked over to where Smoke and Andy were standing. Smoke took the binoculars from Andy and handed them to Sally.
Take a look at the Indian in front, the one riding back and forth yelling at the others. Do you see him?
Sally held the binoculars to her eyes for a moment.
I see him.
Next time they come after us, shoot him. Take your time, get a good shot, but you need to kill him.
All right.
Bro, hold it. You're giving that job to her?
Yes.
But she's a woman. What is it?
She may be a woman, but when it comes to shooting, about the only one here better than she is with a rifle would be Smoke his own self. And I'm not all that sure he's better.
Smoke, looks like old Walking Bear's got him worked up into coming again.
All right, everyone, get ready. They're coming back.
Looking around, he saw that Sally had repositioned herself. No longer behind the wagon wheel, she was now behind a fallen tree, resting the barrel of her rifle on the log. With Walking Bear in the lead, the Cheyenne started another attack. For some unknown reason, Walking Bear sat upright for just a second, and that gave Sally the opening she was looking for. She squeezed the trigger, and her bullet hit Walking Bear right in the middle of his chest. When the others saw their leader go down, they stopped and milled about for a moment, uncertain as to what they should do. One or two started forward, but it wasn't a concerted charge, and like Walking Bear before them, they were shot down. By now, well over half of the party lay dead on both banks of the river, in the water, and on the sandy beaches of the island. They had started the fight with the numerical advantage, but realized now that they were outnumbered. One of the Indians turned and started riding away. Almost instantly, the others followed.
Run! Run, you coward!
Let's hear it from Ms. Sally.
Hoorah!
Hoorah! Hoorah!
With all the self-congratulations, the men forgot all about Hank until Sally saw him over by his brother's body, hanging his head in sorrow.
Hank, we want you to know how sorry we are about Leroy. He was a good man.
Thank you, ma'am.
Trent Williams was standing at the front window of the bank, looking out onto Salcedo's main street when he saw Staley and his men riding back into town. They made a rather imposing sight. 10 men, all wearing long trench coats and wide-brimmed hats pulled low over their eyes. Stopping in front of a building that bore a sign reading Cattlemen's Protective Association, Staley dismounted, then gave the reins of his horse to one of the others. All the rest of the men rode on down to the livery, but Staley, after raking the bottoms of his boots on the edge of the board porch, went into his office. When Williams stepped into the building belonging to the Cattlemen's Protective Association a few minutes later, he saw that Staley had the door of the little stove open and was throwing wood into the flames.
Sheriff Staley?
I'm no longer the sheriff.
I'm sorry. You were the sheriff for so long that it seems natural to call you that.
What do you want, Williams?
Did you get my telegram?
Yeah, I got your telegram. I believe what you said was that you had a profitable proposition for me.
Yes, indeed. It could be very profitable.
How profitable?
$5,000 profitable.
$7,500.
$7,500? What makes you think it should be $7,500? You don't even know what the proposition is. $5,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah, it is a lot of money. And it doesn't matter what the proposition is. If you're willing to pay me $5,000 to do whatever it is you want done, that means you're making a lot more money than you're going to be paying me. I want $7,500 from you or we don't do business.
All right. $7,500. But I can only pay the money after the job is done.
What's the job?
There is a herd of cattle coming up from Colorado. I need that herd.
I see. You say you want the herd, but you...
I didn't say I want the herd. I said I need the herd. Everything depends on it, especially your $7,500.
Uh-huh. You aren't talking about buying this herd, are you?
No.
So what you're asking me to do is steal this herd?
Yes.
You do know, don't you, that I own the Cattlemen's Protective Association? Stealing cows is not my business. My business is running down the outlaws who do steal cows and dealing with them. In fact, we just came back from running down the outlaws who stole cows from Eric Dawkins.
You found them?
Found them and hung them. They're dangling from a tree near Cubs Crossing right now as a warning to anyone else who thinks they can get away with stealing cows.
I see.
And now you're asking me to steal cows?
I'm sorry. I was led to believe that I could do business with you if the price was right.
Suddenly and inexplicably, the frown on Staley's face was replaced by a smile.
We can do business, if the price is right.
$7,500.
$10,000.
Williams was silent for a long time. Then finally, he nodded.
$10,000.
Write out a letter, hiring me to recover your stolen herd.
What? No, you don't understand. The herd isn't stolen, it's...
No, you don't understand. If I'm going after those cows, I'm not going to be left hanging out to dry. You're going to write a letter hiring the Cattlemen's Protective Association to recover your stolen herd.
Wait a minute. If anything goes wrong, that would automatically transfer all the guilt to me.
Yeah, it will, won't it?
All right. All right. You're a difficult man to work with, Mr. Staley, but I don't see as I have any choice. I'll do as you say.
Good. That means that if you do everything I tell you to do, we'll get along just real good. Now, where do I find these cows?
Mike was riding Nighthawk when he heard the sound of hooves, not a restless shuffling of cows repositioning themselves in the night. Since the herd was at a halt, he looked around to discover the source of the sound. Then, in the moonlight, he saw a long, dark line, ragged with heads and horns, moving away from the main herd. At first, he wasn't sure exactly what was going on. Then, all at once, he realized what was happening. These cattle weren't merely wandering away, they were being taken away.
Billy, look out! We got rustlers! Call the others!
Billy was closer to the main camp than Mike, and he shouted back toward the chuck wagon where the others were sleeping.
Smoke! Pearly cow! Turn out, we got rustlers!
Billy's shout not only awakened Smoke and the others, it also alerted the thieves to the fact that they'd been spotted. Instantly thereafter, one of them fired a shot at the sound of Billy's voice. Whoa! Billy shot back, and the crack of the guns right over the head of the stolen cows started them running. Smoke and the others rolled out of their blankets and began shooting. Sally was standing with the wagon, firing a rifle, adding her own effort to the fight. Billy put his pistol away and raised his rifle. He aimed toward the dust and the swirling melee of cattle, waiting for one of the robbers to present a target. One horse appeared, but its saddle was empty. Then another horse appeared, this time with a rider who was shooting wildly. Billy fired and the robber's horse broke stride, then fell, carrying his rider down with him right in front of the running cattle. Downed horse and rider disappeared under the hooves of the maddened beasts. So far, only the cattle that had been stolen were running. The main herd, though made restless by the flashes and explosions in the night, milled around, but resisted running. Cal appeared alongside Billy then, having mounted more quickly than any of the others.
Are the others coming?
Yeah, they're right behind me. Come on, let's get our cows back.
By now, Smoke, Pearly, and Andy had joined them, and they spurred their horses into a gallop toward the fleeing cows. Within minutes, they were riding alongside the running, lumbering animals.
We've got to get to the front!
Billy nodded, but didn't answer. The cows were running as fast as they could run, which was about three-quarters of the speed of the horses. But what the cattle lacked in speed, they made up for with their momentum. With lowered heads, wild eyes, and flopping tongues, the cattle ran as if there were no tomorrow. Finally, Smoke reached the head of the column, rode to the front, and was able to turn them. Once the cows were turned, they lost their forward momentum, slowed their running to a trot, and finally, to a walk. When that happened, the riders were able to turn them and start them back.
What happened to the rustlers?
One of them went down. The others must have run away.
What's that? What's going on?
Damn! These cows were just a diversion. They're after the entire herd!
Sally, Jules, and Hank were firing as fast as they could operate the levers of their rifles.
Lord, there's got to be at least 20 of them. Where'd they all...
Grabbing his chest, Hank went down.
Hank! Hank! Miss Sally! Hank's been hit!
Get up here, Jules! Get up here in the wagon!
But Hank! I can't leave him!
Looking down toward the young cowboy, Sally could tell by the way Hank was spread-eagled on the ground that he was dead.
Never mind, Hank. It's too late for him.
Even as she was calling out to him, she was sighting down the barrel of her rifle. She pulled the trigger. The rifle kicked back against her shoulder, and she saw the outlaw in her sights go down. Jules dashed across the open area toward the wagon. He scrambled up over the side and down into the wagon.
Are you all right?
Yes, ma'am. I ain't been hit none.
Get up here and start shooting.
Yes, ma'am.
The next 30 seconds, Sally and Jules exchanged shots with the rustlers.
Where'd all these folks come from? I thought Smoke was chasing them down.
That's what they wanted to happen. They wanted to pull away all the men so they could waltz right in and take the cattle.
Really?
Well, they sure made a mistake thinking that if all the men was gone, they'd just waltz in here.
You may be young, Joel Sanders, but if you can laugh at a time like this, you're a man in my book.
Why, thank you, Miss Sally.
Staley! We lost three men already.
All right, Cord, break off the fight. Start moving the cows out.
With them shooting at us?
They're in a wagon. You think they're going to be able to run us down in a wagon?
No.
Then do like I said and start moving out them cows before the others come back.
Where'd they go? I don't see any of them.
I don't either.
Oh, boy. We must have run them off.
I don't think so. I think they have something else. The cows.
What?
They're going after the herd.
What do we do?
We don't have to do anything. Smoke's back.
From their position in the chuck wagon, they couldn't actually see what was going on. They could see the muzzle flashes in the night.
I wish I was out there. I feel like I ain't doing my part.
Don't be silly. If you hadn't been here to hold them down for a while, they would already have the herd and be gone.
Yeah, that's right, ain't it? We held them down here until Smoke could get back.
As Smoke led his men back to the herd, he saw the cattle rustlers moving into position to steal the herd. Pearly saw it too.
They're taking the cows!
Like hell they are!
The rustlers, surprised by the fact that someone was in front of them, returned fire. Bullets whistled back and forth in the dark. Looking around, Smoke saw that it was Andy. Andy weaved back and forth in the saddle, then grabbed hold of the saddle horn to keep from falling.
Mike, see to him!
Hold on, Andy, I'm coming!
Even as Mike was moving toward Andy, Smoke shot at another one of the rustlers, a stocky, powerfully built man. As the man tumbled from his saddle, he lost his hat. Smoke could see that he was bald.
Damn! They got Bailey!
Cord watched two men leave, then saw that only he and one other man remained.
Let's go! Hell with Staley!
We go after him, Smoke?
No. We need to get the herd back together. And we need to see to Andy. Anyone else hit?
A quick appraisal of their situation showed that only Andy had been shot. Smoke hurried over to the young cowboy who was now lying on the ground beside his horse. Mike was squatting down beside him.
How bad is it?
He's hurt bad. We need to get him to a doctor.
Huh. We both know there ain't nothing a doctor could do for me, even if you could get me there in time, which you can't.
We'll get you back to the wagon. Sally is about as good as patching up gunshot wounds as any doctor. Lord knows she's patched me up a few times.
I ain't gonna make it, Smoke. There's no sense in you trying to fool me none.
I won't lie to you, Andy. You hit hard.
What the hell you finding to laugh about, Andy?
I owed Dooley $10. I figured when he died, I wouldn't have to pay it. Don't you know now that's the first thing old Dooley's gonna do when he sees me is hold out his hand for that money? Boys, I'll tell you something. Maybe you don't know. This here dying, it ain't hurting me none at all.
All right, boys. Get him up to his horse. Mike, you take him back to the wagon. Pearly, Cal, Billy, let's take care of the cows.
It was nearly dawn by the time all the cows that had been run off were back with the herd.
What we gonna do now, Smoke? Them cows is near dead, they're so tired. We're gonna have to give them a little break.
We'll stay here 24 hours. We could use a rest, too. It'll give us time to get Andy buried.
And Hank.
Hank, too?
Yes, sir. Me and Mike got them both lying under canvas back at the wagon. Oh, and Miss Sally says she's nearby got breakfast ready.
Good. I done worked up an appetite.
Miss Sally was a regular hellion. Shooting the bad guys with one hand and cooking breakfast with the other.
What? Mean to tell me Miss Sally was fixing breakfast and shooting the bad guys all at the same time?
Maybe not for real, but she almost was. You should see her when she's got her dander up, Smoke.
I have seen her, Jules. Believe me, I have seen her.
The corpses of Andy and Hank were dressed in their best shirts as they lay side by side on the canvas that had been spread out alongside the two graves that had been dug for them. The cowboys had put on their best shirts as well for the impromptu funeral that Smoke was about to conduct.
Are the others taken care of?
They're took care of. We found a draw that was big enough to hold them. The sides of the draw was real soft. It was easy enough just to drop the bodies into the hole and push all the dirt in. They're buried, all six of them.
Did you recognize any of them?
Nope. Pretty near figured out which one's the leader, though. was the leader, I mean, seeing as he's dead as the others.
Are you talking about the stocky, ball-headed one?
Yeah, how'd you know that?
After he went down, the fight seemed to go out of all the others.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way I noticed it, too.
Smoke, are you going to say a few words for Hank and Andy?
Smoke nodded, and the men took off their hats, then stood holding their hats in front of them.
Lord, I don't have to tell you that I'm not much for praying. But I figure that when I'm praying for someone else, you'll more than likely listen, even to someone like me. I don't know much about what kind of life these two boys lived before they joined us on this drive. But on this drive, they were good men. They rode Nighthawk without complaining. The partners could always count on them to be wherever they were supposed to be on time. And they died with courage and honor. Lord, all the preachers tell us that you have a special place for men like these two we're sending you today. I want you to welcome them there. Go easy on them, Lord. They've been through blizzards, drought, Indian raids, and rustlers. I know you got some good men with you up there, Lord. Well, sir, here are two more.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
The men put their hats back on.
Better get your old shirts back on. We need to get these boys in the ground.
All right.
Jules, you come with me. We need to get us a good count of how many cows we got left.
Yes, sir.
Smoke watched Jules and Pearly ride away. Then he turned his attention to the bodies of Hank and Andy. Sally sewed the canvas covers closed around the two bodies. Then gently, Billy, Mike, and Cal, using ropes, lowered Hank and Andy into their graves. Smoke watched until the graves were closed, leaving two fresh mounds of dirt. Sally scattered a few pieces of brightly colored glass over the two mounds.
I broke this glass a few days ago. I intended to throw it away. I don't know why I kept it, but now I'm glad I did. It's not as nice as putting flowers on their graves, but it does add a little color.
It's nice.
With the funeral over, the others began drifting away. Sally had something that needed her attention, and for some time, Smoke was alone. He walked over to stand over the two graves. Finally, he saw Pearly and Jules returning to the camp. Swinging down from his horse, Pearly gave the reins of his horse to Jules, then walked over to give the report to Smoke.
We got a good count, Smoke. We still got a little over 2,900. That means that on this whole drive, we lost less than 100 cows.
And four good men.
Yeah, they were four good men, all right.
I'll trade every cow in the herd for them.
Things like this happen, Smoke. You know this better than anyone.
Yeah, I know things like this happen.
Smoke walked over to the fire and poured himself a cup of coffee. He had just taken a swallow when Sally came up to him with her own cup. Seeing her, Smoke reached for the pot and poured her a cup as well.
Are you all right?
I wish you hadn't come.
Why?
A lot has happened.
Smoke, I'm not made of sugar and spice and everything nice.
Well, I'll second the you aren't very nice part.
Why, Smoke Jensen, are you saying I'm not nice?
No, I'm just saying that sometimes you can be a little difficult.
Why, if I weren't nice, I'd throw this scalding cup on you right now.
No, that's not what's stopping you. You just don't want to waste a coffee, that's all.
You found me out, but you didn't answer me.
What was the question?
I asked if you were all right.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Cal came up just then.
It was good to see you two joking a moment ago.
Why'd he say that?
Well, no reason in particular. It's just that some of the boys was beginning to think that you was so upset over losing Hank and Leroy and Andy and Dooley that you wouldn't be able to keep going.
Do the others want to turn back?
No, sir. Not a one of us wants to turn back. We started out on this here journey, and we aim to see it that you get your cows through.
Four good men lost their lives to get the cows this far.
Yeah, but think about it, Smoke. If we don't go on, then all those boys died for nothing. Besides, it's further to go back now than it is to go on ahead. Looks to me like we got no choice.
That's true. We got no choice. Tell the boys to get a good night's rest. We're going on ahead tomorrow.
Oh, yes, sir. I'll tell them just that.
Sally looked up at Smoke after Cal left.
What was that all about?
What was all what about?
You weren't about to turn back.
No, I wasn't. But this way, the men think that they've talked me into it. And sometimes it's good to let a man think he's controlling his own destiny, even if he isn't.